49. The God Face. Moro's eyes were wide as saucers. Mr. Socrates was standing there with his index fingers in his ears. Tharpo was pointing the elephant gun with one hand, a finger of the other hand stuck in his left ear. They looked absolutely ridiculous. Octavia elbowed Moro in the ribs and he suppressed a guffaw. Lizzie laughed hard. "Well, we didn't want to go deaf from the blast of the elephant gun," Mr. Socrates tried to explain, after he pulled his fingers out of his ears. Tharpa lowered the gun. "But never mind, we've found it," Mr. Socrates exclaimed triumphantly. "I don't quite know what to make of it, but it's here. It's here." He pointed at something behind the sarcophagus. "Mr. Socrates, Miss Hakandotje." Moda made a move toward the passage behind the sarcophagus. "She and her men and her dogs are pursuing us. Their way will only be blocked for a short while." "Ah, that's the gunfire we heard," Mr. Socrates said. "Then we'd better be quick about this. Come along." Moro and the two women walked around the sarcophagus and found a statue of a man at least twice the size of a human, seated on a throne carved from what looked like obsidian. It had been set into the wall, facing the sarcophagus. But what really took Moro's breath away was the figure's pitch-black head, its lapis lazuli eyes glowing like stars, the facial features twisted grotesquely. "It's my face," he whispered. He'd stared at his own ugly mockery of a human face for so many years that it was shocking to see something so similar, especially set in stone. But there was something else about the god face. Looking at it was making him queasy, as though it exuded a powerful force. The blue stone eyes were glaring directly into his own, as if searching out his darkest thoughts, his deepest doubts. He began to shake. "Tharpa and I have been studying it for the last little while," Mr. Socrates said. "It certainly does have a disconcerting effect. It seems to bring about nausea and doubt and even saps confidence. Tharpa and I experienced all these things. I cannot say what it is about the shape, or perhaps about what's in the rock itself, that causes this reaction. But I'll admit it's already made me tremble." "It's my face," Moro said to him. "What did you say?" Mr. Socrates replied. "The face on the statue. It's almost exactly like my face." "No, Moro, I don't see it. There's something primeval about it, that's all. Some symbol that makes our minds react the way they do." Octavia turned to Moro, looking pale and frightened. "I don't see the resemblance either, Moro. It's very hard to look at for any length of time." All along, Lizzie had chosen to keep her back to the statue. "I can't look at it," she hissed. "It's cursing us." She took a few steps toward the tunnel, and Moro worried that she would flee. She stood, her arms crossed. "Why haven't we been driven insane like King?" Octavia asked. "Perhaps we're all made of stronger stuff than Alexander King," Mr. Socrates suggested. "Our superior training has allowed us to overcome the effect the image has on us." "And I," Moro thought, "can look. In some way I know this face. It cannot overcome me." A stone-on-stone grinding echoed down the passage. "It sounds as if we will momentarily have unwanted company. Well, I've grown tired of running. Tharpa, set up behind the sarcophagus. Lizzie, you join him. Moro, fetch the godface and be quick about it. I have an idea."
"You mean remove it from the statue?"
"Yes, those are my orders."
"Yes, sir," Moro said.
He climbed the side of the throne and stood on the legs of the statue. The sapphires encrusted in the walls reflected light directly onto the statue's face. He averted his eyes as he climbed closer to it. Nonetheless, his muscles began to tremble and he grew weak, feeling he might fall at any moment. In order to find a way to pry the head off the body, he was forced to look at it. For some reason, he stopped trembling, and something like hope began to creep into his heart. Someone with a similar disfigurement had perhaps become a great pharaoh. Maybe that was why he had left Egypt. He'd come here to carve his own kingdom in the jungle. It could be that I'm not such an oddity after all.
"It's me,"
Moro whispered into the statue's ear.
"Modo, don't be superstitious," Mr. Socrates called. "Bring the godface. Hurry." "There was another person like me," Modo babbled to the face. What was making him speak to a rock this way? He might have been a pharaoh.
"Don't jump to such conclusions. What if the Egyptians just hired a sculptor to create a statue to frighten away grave robbers? Bring it down to me, Modo."
Modo twisted the head a little, and it moved. He turned it again and pulled it from the socket. It gave Modo an awful feeling to remove the head from the body, as if he'd committed a sin. He imagined the ghosts of the pharaoh and all his slaves suddenly swirling around him, shouting their anger. He shook his head and climbed down, surprised at how heavy and cumbersome the godface was. When he stepped down onto the floor and turned, he wasn't surprised to see Miss Hackendottir at the tunnel entrance, her soldiers lined up behind her. Despite his lack of surprise, he still trembled at the sight of her. He hugged the godface against his chest and pulled his cloak over to hide it from her sight.
"Ah, Modo, Mr. Socrates, so kind of you to save us so much trouble," she said. "Please be so good as to give the godface to me. Now."